This is episode number 8 of the Mentoring Developers podcast. Welcome.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi there. Today I'll be talking to Divya and Casey. They are apprentices at Sparkbox. If you remember from episode 6, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode 6, I was talking to Ryan Cromwell, who is a mentor and a senior developer at Sparkbox. And I wanted to bring some of his apprentices and some of the new developers that work in their company and talk about their experiences and ask them from their point of view what it's like to be an apprentice at a company that has a structured mentorship program, and talk about and listen to their stories and learn from them whether this arrangement is working out for them and how they are in their career. And hopefully it will be an inspiration for new and aspiring developers. And if you're a senior developer, perhaps you can look at it as a model that you can apply in your own company or your organization if you are looking for new developers, you're hiring new developers. I think everybody can benefit. I certainly benefit from talking to these wonderful ladies. I think we need to encourage more women to come into programming, and I would love for you to listen to this interview and give me your feedback, give me your ratings on iTunes. I look forward to that. And if you have any questions, please feel free to send me a tweet at mentoringdevs, mentoringdevs on Twitter. And now, here are my guests, Divya and Casey, previously on Mentoring Developers. Hi, Casey. Hi, Divya.
Hello.
It's really exciting to have you guys here, especially since I interviewed Ryan Cromwell, who is one of the people that is mentoring you, and he's a good friend of mine. And I know that you are part of this amazing apprenticeship program that I really want people to know about. But first, I want to know a little bit about yourself, about you guys. So, Divya, who are you? How do you define yourself?
I am a front-end developer as of 2 years ago. And I started out, I guess officially 2 years ago, but I was doing a lot of freelance stuff while I was in college, and I never really saw it as a way for me, as a career option. And so I kind of realized it like towards the end of my college that I could make a career out of it. And then I tried to kind of figure out, okay, what are different outlets that I can use in order to get an in into the industry without having a computer science background? Because there's always an expectation when you get into like the software field that you have that experience. And so without that experience, it kind of is challenging because people expect you to have the basics, and you might not have, you know, like algorithms or data structures or an understanding of pure understanding of Java, Scala, whatever. And so I was attending a lot of web events at the moment, and so I came across Sparkbox and their apprenticeship program, and so I applied, and then that's how I kind of got roped into the apprenticeship, and then that turned into a full-time job. So that's kind of how I got into the field, I guess.
That's all good. I think that what I wanted to know was how you define yourself, and I think you're currently defining yourself as a, can I say that you consider yourself a web developer? What are you?
I think I consider myself as a web developer, and like overall just generally curious about the world and learning new things. And I'm generally very, like, I love everything about the web and like learning about new web technologies and listening to podcasts and going to meetups and stuff like that, because I think the web community is very engaging and opening. And
what I want to do is talk to you later about how you got into it, because I'm really interested in what got you interested in this to begin with, because it looks like you weren't, when you were a kid, you probably weren't thinking about becoming a developer. But let's leave that for later. I want to get to Casey. Casey, you work with Divya. How do you define yourself?
Well, I also am a web developer. My background originally was in front-end development and design. But then when I discovered Sparkbox and their apprenticeship, I had wanted to get more into back-end development, specifically with Ruby. And so now, after the apprenticeship is over, I mostly work with Rails.
Okay. And I know that from your website, you have a fantastic website, by the way. You're doing a lot of things. I see a lot of pictures on Instagram. I see some food items and recipes, I suppose.
Oh, yes.
SVGs. I saw SVGs. I was like, this girl is doing a lot of different things. It's not just Rails.
Oh, no. I love all parts of the web development process. I have a hard time picking. If I do one thing for too long, I get bored and I want to go and, maybe play around with front-end development or animate some SVGs.
Do you remember your first encounter with programming?
Oh, yes. It was Neopets. years and years ago, I can't remember if it was middle school or high school, but I don't know if you remember the Neopets website where you could have like a virtual pet. You could also have a page for your pet where you could build a custom page. And they had a tutorial that taught HTML. And in fact, they have that exact same tutorial, outdated and everything, on the website still. But that was actually my first introduction to development.
Okay. And what kept you going with it?
Honestly, I stopped after that. And then in college, I took an HTML class. I had a couple semesters where I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do as a career. And I took HTML and I was like, oh, I remember this. And then I picked it up and ran with it from there.
What about you, Divya? How did you start? What was your first experience with programming?
My experience, with programming was kind of abstract in a sense, because, my introduction to it was more from, the logic side of things and, how... Because I took philosophy in high school, and then I didn't realize the correlation between computer science and philosophy.
Now let's join part two of the interview.
Oh, yay!
It's finally back. I don't know. We may have to cut all these silences out. And this just turned into a weird interview, completely unexpected, because my daughter started bawling. I don't know if you could hear her, but she was screaming, and we had interruptions. This is a lot of fun. telling you about my daughter, and I want both of them, but especially the 5-year-old. To learn programming as soon as she can, because I need an accomplice, or I need an apprentice. I need a mentorship program of my own in my house. I have these projects. Somebody needs to work on it. I want to teach them so that they can help me on my on my web projects. But jokes aside, do you wonder if you want to teach your kids how to code when they're young?
I had the same ideas as you. I wanted to, my oldest is 9. So she's definitely in school. She's getting acquainted with computers and learning how to actually use the internet and stuff. And I know she's very interested, and I've tried teaching her in the past, but then I get overly excited. And I think that I present things in the wrong way for someone who's not just new to the industry, but just new to everything. Which is very, it's interesting. It's a difficult situation. I hope she'll learn to program. I would like for her to. It'd be awesome to sit down at dinner and, you know, get to talk about computers and geeky things. But if not, yeah, well.
It's not something that you think everybody should learn. Because there's this movement, right? This code.org movement where everybody, all the kids in the world should know how to code. And just like they know math, right? Everybody knows math. Well, you don't have to be a mathematician, right? You may be an artist, but you still know how to add, how to subtract. So there's this movement, but you don't subscribe to that.
I in a way, I think that all kids should have a basic understanding. I mean, I'm not saying all kids, I don't think all kids should be like hardcore programmers and know how to, you know, to do that stuff. But I think that there's definitely needs to be an understanding of how things work. I don't want, it kind of bothers me when people my own age, when they don't understand, you know, the concept of the internet and what it is and how it works. And I know people hear terms like the cloud and they think things are magically in clouds. Like, I'd like to prevent that and actually have, you know, kids that understand what technology is. And I think, I don't know, it'll make more well-rounded adults.
Was it harder to get started, to be accepted as a valuable member of the development community or somebody accomplished, you know, being female and having children, responsibilities, and not perhaps all the free time in the world? Was that discouraging at some point? Was that not a problem at all? How was your experience, Casey?
I don't think it was ever really an issue. I never really sought out to be, you know, to make my name in the industry. You know, I just want to do what I love and then go home and be with my family. As for being well respected, I don't necessarily know if I am, because most people don't, you know, my coworkers know who I am, but that's the extent of it. So if they respect me, that's enough.
If you have a nurturing, enabling environment, and I believe that Sparkbox has that. They're not paying me to say this, though. They should, though, but but I respect the people that are running Sparkbox, and I think that they've created a good environment, and that's really good to know. But you must have something you struggle with. I struggle with it. I struggle with things all the time, but especially when I was starting out, I struggle with a lot of things. What do you guys struggle with, both of you? We can talk to Divya first. What are your struggles?
Generally or technically?
generally speaking, it doesn't have to be a thing. It could be, what are you struggling with right now? It could be, you know, in life. It could be something related to your career. But I think it's all related in the end.
Yeah. I guess the thing that I find, and the thing that I've been going, I guess, soul searching for has been, what does it, because, so we have a lot of resources for people getting into the industry, a lot. There's Code School, and there's Code Academy, and there's apprenticeships, and there's, I don't know, boot camps or whatever you can get into to get into the industry. But what happens if you're kind of in the in-between stage, like you're no longer a beginner, but you're not an experienced person at the same time? You're kind of in this weird limbo where you're trying to figure out how do I get better? Like, going back to your previous question, like how, like what is it going to take for me to get to the next level? And that's something that I am exploring at the moment and trying to figure out, okay, like what should I be focusing my time on, and what project should I be pursuing in order for me to be learning things that will allow me to grow as a software developer?
The biggest thing I'm struggling with right now is I just finished my apprenticeship in June. So I've been actually working for about 2.5 months now. And it feels like I need to be no more than what I do. Like, I feel like I'm almost not learning fast enough to be in the working environment. My issue right now is that I feel like I'm not contributing enough. which everyone keeps telling me I am, but, and maybe I am, but I guess it's a little bit of an imposter syndrome where I just don't feel like I'm qualified to do what I'm doing at the moment.
So how do you deal with that imposter syndrome, or do you deal with it at all?
I try to remind myself that, you know, it's only been 2.5 months, and I just, you know, finished an apprenticeship where I learned something that's brand new to me. You know, I had never touched Ruby before in my life. So I have to cut myself some slack, but, you know, I'm not Wonder Woman. I can't, yeah, I have to take time to actually learn it and to get good at it. So it's more of me just taking a step back and saying, hey, calm down. You know, they're not taking you in the office and telling you you're learning too slow. They keep telling me I'm doing great. So I have to take comfort in what they, in their words.
I think that's something that's, that has been on my mind for a while, because I know a lot of people. I know I've interviewed people who are really experienced, you know, 20 years experience, and accomplished book authors, presenters, and they all seem to have imposter syndrome. We all suffer from it at some level, because there's this problem of projection, you know, self-projection. Right? You're doing something that is critical, that's very important, but you've never done this before. And you have to act like you know what you're doing,
right?
Because if you don't know what you're doing, what if you give the impression, then people will not have the confidence in you to let you work on that. But deep down, we, all of us, feel like we don't know what to do. I mean, I feel that all the time.
We're like,
I don't know what I'm doing here, right? I shouldn't be doing this. Somebody, you know, who knows this thing in and out should be doing this.
Mm-hmm. There's a really great blog post that I wrote, that I read, like, I think 2 or 3 years ago, and I guess I'll link it. I don't know how to link stuff. I'll like send it in the chat.
Me and we'll add it in the show notes.
Okay, yeah. It's called No One Knows What the F They're Doing, and it just goes through like the three types of knowledge, and it's a really interesting exploration into like things you do know, things you don't know, and things you don't know you don't know. And it's actually really eye-opening in terms of like, not just from a software perspective, but in general, because it's like everyone is as clueless as you, if not more. And it's just like very like true and real in terms of your understanding of like, oh, you're not the only one who thinks that. There's lots of people who think that same way.
Yeah, I think that just like you have these stages of grief, there are these stages of knowledge where when you know only a little bit, you think you really are, you know, you're something special. You know a lot. And as you get a little bit deeper and you learn a little bit more, maybe you're an intermediate person, maybe with a year or two of experience, you realize you don't know anything. And I think that when you get more experience, and with 10, 15, 20 years experience, when you've seen movement software, you know, movements come and go, and people come and go, and you have worked on all different kinds of projects, you realize it's okay to feel like that. I think that's where you become mature as a software developer, when you're able to live with that.
I think another interesting thing about like imposter syndrome is, you know, yeah, it doesn't feel good. It kind of makes you feel, you know, you feel crummy, but it is a motivator. Where instead of sitting back and, you know, oh, I got this, I know everything I need to know, and then not continuing to learn, you know, it's almost, I feel like I have to push, and I do need to learn, and, you know, keep my skills up to date and figure out how to build something. So it's a motivator. It's just not my favorite motivator.
If you could start over, Casey,
mm-hmm.
would you do differently as a new developer?
I don't know. I don't know if I would do anything differently. I had a lot of ups and downs as I, you know, learned things, but that's how I learned things. Maybe I would have moved to a bigger city sooner So I'd had more opportunities. But other than that, I don't know if I'd change anything.
Divya?
I personally would have gone to school for computer science.
Why? Why? What? Because we just had this discussion about how this a degree in computer science doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I think there's certain things that do. So, for example, like I know I have a very weak understanding of algorithms and efficiency, and while that might not be a huge while that might not be something that I tackle on a daily basis, like it would give me a stronger understanding of certain things. And in some sense, like also one other thing that I realized is that I spent a semester at Brown and I took classes at the CS department. And one thing I realized is that I actually have no qualms about the direction, like the direction of not the non-school approach of like going through an apprenticeship and everything. But I would definitely say that going to a school for computer science opens like a lot more doors for you in some sense. And I know this sounds really controversial.
Let us know how we are doing by tweeting at us at Mentoring Devs. And if you are enjoying the show, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Now, let's get back to the show.
Are you there yet, Divya?
I think we're still waiting for her.
What is going on? I was saying that perhaps everybody this Saturday morning decided to watch Netflix.
Oh yeah.
And we're just clogging the
yeah.
The wires, the cables here. Hopefully I don't even know if I should just cut this stuff off. The interruptions, just leave it in for kicks.
After you.
Okay, so we were talking about, what were we talking about? Imposter syndrome?
We were talking about what we would do differently.
Okay, so
yeah,
what would you do differently? You said that you would get a degree, and we were talking about,
yeah, I think traditional computer science is very archaic, and like the certain knowledge you don't necessarily use, but I feel like certain concepts I could definitely benefit from knowing. So like I want to get a better understanding of data structures and algorithms and like functional programming, stuff like that, that I don't necessarily get while in my workplace, but it'll be, I think it would enhance my understanding and my ability to learn certain things had I had a computer science background. And also, it would open a lot more doors for me, because in some sense, so when I was, and I guess this is like the caveat to apprenticeships and being a non-traditional software developer, as a junior developer, getting your first job can be really challenging, because you kind of almost have to prove to people that you can add value to the team and be as useful as someone with a 4-year computer science degree. And that in a sense takes a lot of it takes a lot of confidence in your own abilities, and it in some sense, like that's the caveat and like the drawback to not having a traditional education, I would say. Just the first few jobs that you get, like over time you definitely will get work experience and people will see that you've created projects and added value to teams, but the first job that you get out of a code school or whatever is challenging. It's difficult.
So yeah, so there's two parts to your observation. One is that it is certain pieces of knowledge, some mm-hmm. concepts about, for example, algorithms, and knowing which algorithms works better and
mm-hmm.
which algorithm to use. Or there could be other concepts. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, we learned about the finite state automata. And it sounds very vague, but ultimately it comes back down to
mm-hmm.
how computers work. And
yes, yes.
And some other really interesting concepts that will help you. Like if you were doing if you were to write your own programming language, I think you probably will really struggle if you didn't have a good computer science.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt.
But for certain other types of professions within software development, like, you know, web development, it's unclear if how useful that is. But you're right, getting your first job, it's much easier if you have a degree, especially if you have a degree from a top college.
Oh, yeah.
In computer science, computer engineering, that is absolutely true, especially in big companies. If you want to work for a Fortune 500 company, you're going to struggle if you don't have a degree.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, Fortune 500 companies and big companies generally don't have these types of artistic, creative work that you guys are doing. So this is a type of personality. You will not be able to learn, for example, all the different things that you're learning right now, if you work for a big insurance company or a bank, for example. You would have a more stable job, and I think that you would have an easier job. But if you are creative, and if you like to create things and learn things, and learning is a thing, is a good thing, then I think it's probably a good idea to stay away from really large companies, because they tend to not like people who do, you know, crazy things, out of the box things. They just really want you to stay in the box. And that's pretty much, if you can fit in the box, they like you a lot. And that's good, because for some people, that is exactly what they need. They need the structure. They don't need to go and learn 50,000 things. And, it's more about stability versus, you know, I don't want to say instability, but stability versus something else. That if you really crave stability, if you want to work for a company for 20 years, you probably don't want to work for a startup. That startup will probably not exist in 20 years. That's probably a good reason to do that. Most companies fail. But if you're interested in learning the craft, and if you understand the meaning of craftsmanship, then I think you will learn really well at smaller companies. Okay, that's just my point of view. I could be completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to ask you guys about software development as a career for somebody who's curious, somebody who's like, I think this could be interesting. I have other choices. I could go into accounting. I could do other things. But software development looks interesting, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's really all that. You know, how do you rate it? On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate this as a good career?
I don't even know. We have zero perspective on what accounting and medicine and all of those other fields are. So it's kind of hard to rate something when you have... And it's so super subjective, so...
Exactly the point. We want to get your opinion. There is no one right answer. So you can say, okay, let's change the rating a little bit. If you're uncomfortable with the numeric scale, let's go with, it's excellent, it's good, but only if you're this type of person, or it's not for everybody, or is it for everybody? Let's go with that.
It's interesting you mentioned accounting, because I actually took accounting. That was my major for a year. I quickly discovered that it was not for me. Just because, as my personality type, I like things that change and that evolve, and I don't want to do the same thing every day. So if you're a person that just wants to go in and do some work, not really have to think about it, then hey, you know, there's other careers out there. But if you want to actually go in and have to really use your mind and think about things, then development's great.
Have you ever thought about this dirty word? It's called self-promotion. It's actually two words. Self-promotion. People, there are certain segments that believe that's that's something that you should never, ever think about. Right? Promoting yourself, letting people know that you're good, that you're available, that you have these skills by all these different avenues, which is one is to put your work out. You could write about it. You can talk about it. You could give conference talks. Essentially, it's all self-promotion. Letting people know you are somebody that they should pay attention to. Versus the other approach is let the work, your work speak for itself. So you just put your head down, do your work. And if anybody's interested, they will talk to you. If otherwise, it's not your concern. So those are two different positions. What do you guys think about this?
I think that's a very huge misconception. So there's this misconception that talking about yourself is bad, or the whole idea of like, okay, let me backtrack a little bit. So I have noticed a lot in software development firms and companies and various places that they value humility. Humility is like a huge thing that people value in employees. They want that. And in some sense, I think there's a misunderstanding of what humility means, because a lot of the times when I hear the word humility, I end up seeing people take that as like never taking or not taking credit for the work that they do, or not being like, oh, I actually am a really good developer. It's a lot of like, oh, I'm not that good. Oh, I'm not a great developer. There's so much I still have to learn. Like, yes, I've been doing development for 10 years, but I'm still not good. And that's like, I have an issue with that, because I'm just like, you should be able to, yes, let your work speak for yourself, but be able to take ownership of your own work and be like, yes, I built this thing and I've made a lot of progress over like my years of development. I'm not there yet, but I have, you know, made all this progress so far. And I don't think there's an issue in that at all. And I think that if anything, our industry, self-promotion is not seen as bad, because it's not seen as self-promotion. It's seen as something like, let me share my work with you and show you what I'm doing. And instead of like kind of hiding away in my corner and building stuff, it's like, I'm open sourcing the work that I do, and I want to talk about the technologies and the discoveries that I found in my exploration of this technology or that technology or working on this problem.
I absolutely agree with Divya, for sure. I think that there's no shame in taking pride in the work that you do and wanting to share it with people. I think there's a line where that it could cross to where it gets, you know, people can get a little cocky about it, but you know, being excited about the things that you do and create, there's nothing wrong with that.
I know, Divya, that you've made a presentation at that I saw on YouTube. Very nice, by the way. Have you made any other presentations?
I've done lightning talks about various things, like technologies that I'm learning and concepts that I picked up. Yeah.
Was that at local conferences in Dayton?
They're just the Dayton web developer meetups.
And how was that experience?
It's good, because I think it allows me to kind of take a step back and analyze my process. And like one of the lightning talks I gave was about like writing better code and my process for how I was being very conscientious about how I wrote my code. And in some sense, like it allowed me to analyze my own process and be able to explain to somebody what my exploration was and what my findings were and my process overall. So in some sense, like, it helps, because take for example, and it's not necessarily in presentation, but in the way that I write code, I document my functions, I document the code that I write, and the modules that you know, like JavaScript modules or whatever that I write. And in some sense, I have to take a step back and be able to write things in a cogent enough way so that the next person who has no understanding of what I had written can read that and understand things. And I think that's a really valuable skill in our industry. Because in some sense, yes, we want to write code for things to work, but ultimately there's a lot of technical debt that comes with the code that we write. We're not going to be the only one. There's a high likelihood that we're not going to be the only one who's going to be touching that code base. There's going to be multiple other developers after us who we might not even meet, who will be writing code or adding code to it. And so being able to articulate your thought process or articulate your findings and what you're trying to convey is really useful in our industry.
I think that this is a really good approach. And there's a feeling that when you write code in a modern programming language, you're not writing for the computer, you're writing for a human. So for somebody to understand your intent. And later on, you can do a transformation on that and make it more efficient. But that will be a secondary concern. The primary concern is when I look at the code, it's like I'm reading a book. Do I know what you are trying to achieve? And if I know what you're trying to achieve, and if there is a technical defect, let's say that is a bug, this connection interruption is sponsored by the Internet Service Providers of America. Proudly destroying podcasts, one connection at a time. I don't know who's the culprit this time.
Oh, goodness.
Well, let's start again. So, what I want to say is that if you're writing code, and I'm reading it, and I know the intent, and I know what you're trying to do here, and in a code review, or perhaps you're looking over your own code later on, 6 months, 2 months, 3 months later, and there is a bug. There's a serious problem in the code. But when you're looking at it, it's obvious, it's clear what your intention was. And if that's the case, then it's very easy for me to redo that code and perhaps find a technical problem and solve it. But I should never have to question the intention. I should never have to say, I have no idea what you're trying to do here, what I was trying to do 6 months earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have all seen code. I have certainly had my share of looking at code that it's impossible to tell what the objective. And that's where naming comes in, you know, variable naming. And there's all of these patterns that we have discovered, you know, and that we like to use. They are all, and really a lot of the testing that we do, the test of a development, it's really to bring out the intent.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really good to know that you've learned it pretty quickly. Kudos to you. What's the best advice you can give to other developers trying to get started in this career, Casey?
Just don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't ever feel like, you know, you have a stupid question. I find when I can't do something and I'll type in Google my question verbatim, I'll find someone asking the exact same thing. But you're never alone in having questions.
Same question for you, Divya.
I would totally agree. I think being able to ask questions or not being afraid to ask questions is a great skill, because in some sense, like, no question is a bad question. And even being able to ask someone else a question rather than trying to figure it out. Because when you first start out, you might not know what you're trying to ask. You might not know how to phrase the question properly. And that's something that you learn as you get better at development. You know how to traverse Stack Overflow and figure out the questions that will be useful and the answers that will help you get to the right answer. You might not have that skill at the beginning. So being able to ask somebody, as silly as a question as it may be, going to somebody else and asking them a question, like, is very valuable and useful.
Do you think there's such a thing as asking too many questions, though? Do you ever get that feeling that if you ask too many questions, then people are not going to respect you?
No, I don't think so. I maybe it could come across as annoying, Maybe I always get nervous that like I'm asking too many questions. I might be annoying the person, but I don't think it ever comes across as, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, because you're learning, and most people are understanding, like, oh, hey, they're learning, and they're excited to help you learn.
I think that's probably also true because they know the history, they know that you went through the apprenticeship program.
If you're working on a team where people tell you you're asking too many questions, like kind of say you shouldn't be asking too many questions, then you're probably working in the wrong place. And I guess it's just the expectation for somebody who is, you know, 1 year into their career will probably ask a lot of questions and not know the right answers to certain things and need a lot more mentoring and direction than someone who's been in the field for, you know, 3 years or 5 years or 10 years. And the expectation definitely is like over time, as you get more experience, you'll probably ask less and less questions. But I guess the understanding is like there's really, at least at Sparkbox, like nobody is ever fazed by you asking too many questions. It's never even an issue because I've seen people who are way more senior than I asking a lot of questions about projects, like maybe not the technical side of things per se, but maybe like how to architect a code to solve a certain problem. And we can have multiple discussions and multiple questions asked about what the best way to solve that problem is, what the most efficient way to solve that problem is. And so ultimately it's like, you know, a senior developer's asking, you know, multiple, like thousands of questions about one thing, and it's not seen as a problem. So in some sense, there's really no such thing as too many questions.
That's a really good approach, I think, because you shouldn't be afraid of asking questions. It's my personal feeling is questions are always good, always welcome. But I have seen in certain organizations where questions are not welcome. Those are really toxic organizations. I think we can do a lot better as an industry. Really glad that your experiences have been really good. Sparkbox, you're doing something good. Again, you should pay me, seriously. So, is there anything that you think people should check out? Maybe your blogs, maybe your, you know, other things you're working on, or other, you know, other people's work that you think people should check out? Oh, are you typing it in? Is that what you're doing?
No, I'm trying to figure out what are good resources. I guess I would say like some of the podcasts are really good, and it depends on what you want to learn. So I can't think of anything right now.
So tell me about this podcast. I think this has been a pretty interesting episode because we had so many interruptions and it didn't go so smoothly, and some of the questions perhaps we were not so rehearsed. So that question, the question and answer that we're doing, do you think is what can we do it in this podcast to make it better? You can say so. It's okay. It's a safe place. You can say what's on your mind.
I honestly can't think of anything at the moment. I mean, I know that there were definitely some technical issues, but you know, the questions were really good. You know, I think we had some really good conversation, and even, you know, in some of the answers, it kind of like led off to even more interesting conversation that maybe the question didn't, you know, intend for. But I really don't have anything.
I think that the purpose of this podcast is to bring out your stories. People like you who are starting out, who are not conventional, and they're not super cocky about their own abilities, and they need somebody to give them a little hand, and we all need to listen to your stories, your points of view, and sort of welcome you in our community. And I think that's a little, it's not as prevalent in our industry, unfortunately. And you are very lucky, and I'm very excited that you guys are working at a company that's providing you this environment. And I hope that other companies will do that too. And that's the point of this podcast. And if you find that useful, hopefully you'll subscribe to it and people will listen to it. And we will eventually, at some point, we will have this environment where new people are welcome and people are don't have to get harassed and don't have to, stress out about their everyday lives. And we can do a little bit better than what we're doing right now. I think Sparkbox is doing the right thing. You guys have been amazing. And you gave me a lot of time this morning. And I know that you have a lot of stuff going on, but it's really important for our listeners to learn from you guys, your stories. How was your experience with this interview?
It was very good. I was a little bit nervous, going into it, but it was nice to get to share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a fun experience, definitely.
Okay, so since you guys are not really promoting your own websites, let me go ahead and do that for you guys. I know that Casey, you have a website called KaseyBon, KaseyBon.com. Mm-hmm. You have your GitHub profile, you have your Instagram and blog, and it's very nice, and you made it yourself, and I think this is really commendable.
Thank you.
Everybody should check out KaseyBon.com. Divya, do you have something, or perhaps this will motivate you to build your own blog or your website?
I have a website. It's shortdiv.com. Built it a while ago.
And do you keep it up to date?
I have not kept it up to date, actually. I've been pretty awful about that. So there's motivation for me to go work on it.
Yeah, you have competition now. Yeah, you have to down Casey now. Casey and you are in this battle now. Let's see who can make a better website. I'm just kidding. Don't do that. Just go ahead and start writing. I think blogging is a very good way of getting your name out there, getting some experience in writing, and clearing your head. Like, you have an idea, you have a thought. Even if it's 200 words, 300 words, even if it's not big, just put it out there. I think you will definitely benefit over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I would like to thank Divya and Casey. Joe. And I think I muted myself. Divya and Casey for being on this show and being this wonderful guest. And I hope that at some point in the future, you can have you guys back in a panel discussion, perhaps with some other mentors and other people who are in your position. And talk about, some of the issues. And perhaps maybe a year from now, you would have a different experience and you could share how things went back, in a year from now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
This has been fun.
Yes, it has.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.